With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
John Carroll Lynch here.
Hello!
I'm here. American Horror Story has been a big part of my life and a big part of my work, and it's been a joy to be on that show for a lot of different reasons. I just have one little tiny piece of advice, which is don't go out there.
They've conquered the big screen. Now, get ready for the spin-off sure to send chills down your spine. It's Nico, Brian, Mike, and Dustin in Don't Go Out There, the series.
Welcome back, everybody, to DGOT, the series. We really appreciate y'all listening. We hope y'all have been enjoying these series reviews. I know we have. It's been a lot of fun. Just want to give a quick shout out to our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Everything about our podcast is on the website. All of our episodes and interviews, if you want to check those out. We've done some incredible interviews in the past. Go check them out there in a specific tab by themselves so you don't have to scroll through hundreds of episodes on Apple or Spotify, etc. We also have our store if you want to grab a shirt, a mouse pad, a hat, all that good stuff. We'd love to see your pictures, you know, rep your favorite podcast. And Chan's Etsy page is also attached if you want to grab a Tumblr. All of our social media links are on there as well. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. Like us, subscribe us, follow us, all that good stuff. And the last thing I want to shout out on our website is our Patreon. We call it Blood Donors. We have the traditional monthly reoccurring kind. If you want to support us, help us pay the bills, as we say. Or if there's a movie you want us to review, that option is available as well. Just check out our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Also, if you haven't noticed, we've recently joined the Believe Network, so there's some ads on our program now. But if you want ad-free content, go check us out on Blood Donors. The ad-free episodes will be available there. We appreciate your support. We're continuing on with American Horror Story 1984, episodes 5 and 6. I liked both episodes as well. I had fun with them. I'll just leave it at that. I'm doing scene by scene tonight, so I'm going to save my voice for all this reading I got to do. Brian, what do you think about episode 5 and 6? You can talk about both if you want to.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they weren't my favorites. They were definitely not as good as 3 and 4 were, in my opinion. It almost didn't feel like the same show, if I'm being honest. Like, I'm still interested in seeing where all this goes. So the series definitely still has me, but I don't feel like that these two were the best representation of it, if that makes sense. Now, again, I've only seen these 6, so I haven't watched ahead yet. But, I mean, we've almost ventured into, like, more sci-fi, in these two episodes, and I have a ton of questions right now after watching these two. Like, you know, not how any of this can happen. I mean, I realize this is a fictional show, but like in world, in this AHS 1984 season, how is even some of this shit happening? Like, so hopefully I get my answers next week.
Not my favorite. I ain't gonna lie. I liked episode 5 more than 6, but it's like, even 5 was my least favorite up to that point. This season is 1984. I get needing to establish some backstories and everything, but there's way too much time jumping going on. Not so much in this episode. There is some, but in episode 6 specifically, it's like, this is 84. The season isn't called 1985, 1989, 1980, 1970. Like, I don't know. There's too much jumping. I feel like we've gotten so far off the path of the story they started out telling. Now they're developing it and they're giving us more layers to it, but I don't know. That's not to say that I didn't enjoy them. I mean, they're still fine, but comparative, I didn't like them as much as the first 4 episodes.
That's fair. And I mean, that's pretty much the consensus from like all of the fans and listeners too. They said, you know, the second half's not as good as the first half. So, and I won't disagree with that either. Y'all ready to jump to the scene by scene for episode 5?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
All right. The episode starts with Dee Dee, a.k.a. Nurse Rita, smoking in her car outside a house. Suddenly, another car speeds by and parks in front of another house. The man and woman exit, and she's furious. Son of a bitch. 1980, Dee Dee enters the home, and she bangs on her father's door, telling him to open the door. She barges in the room and sees the woman cuffed to the bed, presumably dead. Dee Dee sees several pictures of dead women on the wall until suddenly the woman springs up alive. Her dad enters the room with bleach, and he asks what she's doing here. You were never supposed to know this side of me. No one was. It's a pain, a hunger that I can't satisfy. Dee Dee says, you raised me, love me. This isn't you. Put down the knife, she begs, and he lowers the knife. Until he stabs himself in the neck, killing himself. Intro, and now we see the Night Stalker again telling Dee Dee he was dead and raised up again by the Unholy One. Night Stalker says he saw what happened to her that night. Her dad had a wild appetite. Richard says the darkness is in everyone, even you. He calls her out on releasing Mr. Jingles and calls her evil. Dee Dee's dad appears and says the fruit of darkness is within her. You are your father's daughter. Follow in my footsteps. He disappears and Xavier says the burning car isn't big enough. He lights a log on fire, threatening to set the woods on fire until Margaret knocks him out. They all start to plan and Margaret says they can go across the lake in the boat to see if the other campers have a car. Montana volunteers Chet to join her. Brooke thinks it's fishy that Margaret didn't bring up the other campers until now. Montana grabs an axe and goes to kill her until Brooke sees Ray and goes to find him. Xavier wakes up and asks if the fire worked and if anyone was coming. Brooke calls for Ray, asking if he got help. He can't recollect what happened, and then they hear keys jangling. Brian, that's the opening set of scenes. What'd you think?
So I think this cold open with Dee Dee and her backstory is really good. I think it's probably the best of these two episodes. Sometimes with these secondary characters, you know, I feel like in TV shows that, you know, they can become filler and unnecessary, especially with these backstories. But this gave us a reason on why she pursued what she did. And, you know, like I said, it was just so well done with the performances from Angelica Ross and the great Tim Russ Tuvok from Star Trek. Gwyneth Paltrow directed this episode, and the shaky cam she implemented, especially at the start of this set of scenes, was perfect. You know, she would be behind Tim Russ and how it only focused on the knife and then on her. It would go back and forth as she, you know, pled back and forth with him. Fantastic fucking scene and open. Like I said, maybe the best of the series for me in terms of everything and how it played out. Now, Peyton did a couple of episodes of Walking Dead as well, so just a little tidbit. And yeah, I don't know what the fuck is going on with this Night Stalker and his supernatural shit yet. You know, I also think we could probably have used a better sound cue when he's talking to Dee Dee, but that's just kind of been my complaint throughout the series. The sound is just, it's up and down. Like, I love the music, but sometimes it's misplaced. And I texted this in the group chat, but I thought it was worth saying over the air, you know, confession time. I'm rooting for Montana. Like, to no prevail, I'm sure. You know, but I like her character a lot. It's, you know, despite her shitting the bed during these multiple murder attempts. That's my girl. Go ahead.
She's a bad person, and so are you.
I agree.
Seeing this shit with fake-ass Rita's dad, like, that explains, you know, why she is the way she is. You know, trauma turns people into ugly things. But I still don't forgive her. But that is some heavy shit, and I like that it was given to us the way that it was. A good way to establish her character arc, and, you know, jumping ahead, she does redeem herself at the 11th hour in this episode, or these two episodes we're doing tonight. Then on the other side of our badass opening credits, which we're going to compliment pretty much every time, we get back to Ramirez, and the tension very high. The score is great there. I think I love the music choice there. Xavier, my God, he's showing that he was definitely in drama club in high school. I've breathed the fire of 1,000 white hot suns. Shut up, dude. Jesus Christ, man. It couldn't be any more dramatic. Good tension when Montana has the hatchet and Brooke doesn't suspect anything. And she just tells her, oh, good call. Keep it close. Like, I like that. It shows that Brooke is still trusting. She's not suspicious of anything. She still believes the best in who she thinks is her friends. Like, that was such a good touch.
And such a missed opportunity.
For Montana?
Yeah, she could have uppercutted her right there. Gone. Ball game.
Jesus. If she'd have done that, I might have to find her in real life, have some words with her. You can't be taking out my girl like that. But this is a pretty good open. I didn't have a ton of notes on it, but, you know, it definitely drew me in.
All right, we're in the canoe now with Margaret and Chet. He says he doesn't see anything and reassures her they'll get out of this nightmare. She asks if he ever thinks about death. He says he did in the pit. She preaches the gospel, and he's curious why she's so worried about his soul. She tells him there's nothing on the other side and begins mollywhopping him with a paddle, saying she wants to get them all alone and kill them. She hooks the anchor to him and tries to cut his ear off. He fights back some until she throws the anchor overboard, dragging him below. She rips his ear off and smashes his hand until he lets go and is pulled under. Brooke and Ray are hiding, and he assures her nothing will happen to her. Brooke tells Ray about her dumb dream to move to L.A. and be a nobody. She says she doesn't know who she is, speaking on her relationship to her fiancé. Ray tells her he always wanted to be a doctor, but got wrapped up trying to impress people, so he forgot who he was. It cost me. He tells her not to change to fit in and says she's rad. She's smitten and kisses his lips. The two start to kiss more as they want to live and enjoy life. Dee Dee breaks into the cabin with Montana and Xavier. She tells him she released Jingles. Xavier snaps, saying it's her fault. He's a monster. Why he'll never be on TV Guide and is forced to be on radio. And I got a good laugh out of that. Dee Dee escapes and he chases after her. Ray tells Brooke that was amazing as she gets dressed. He asks if that was good for her, as all those guys do for some reason, and she admits he was her first. He grabs her hand, asking how she feels thirsty as she prances away. She opens the fridge and begins screaming. We see Ray's head in the fridge, and she cries, asking, what is he? She's sprinting away, making it back to Montana's cabin. She tells her about Ray being dead. She begins to question everything until Montana smacks her, saying she'll be leaving this world soon. All right, Bryce, next set of scenes, what do you think?
Probably my least favorite set of scenes, to be honest. And, you know, come on, though. I mean, I've been asked to buy a lot in this series, but Margaret overpowering Chet in this canoe, it was eye-rolling at best, in my opinion. And I know he's not 100%, but come on. You know, and Leslie Grossman's line delivery of, so I can kill you, sounded like Pennywise or something. I don't know. It cracked me up. Sorry, Leslie, still want you on the show. And Chet just sat there and watched her as she picked up the laughably light anchor, by the way. And look, I mean, there's no way that thing is snatching him up like that. If it was heavy enough to do that to a dude that's like, what, 225, 235, then, I mean, they would have had issues with it in the fucking canoe in the first place. So, I don't know. I'm not buying that at all. And then we get ghost sex. Like, what is fucking happening here? Like, I know I said last week during our movie review of Cabin Fever that, you know, that one sex scene is the most unnecessary in probably cinema history that I've seen. But I don't know. And this one's just so fucking bizarre. I mean, props to Ghost Ray for being able to get it up despite, you know, being a ghost and running from a serial killer. But again, I say, what the fuck? Dan Dworkin, writer of this episode, what are we doing here? Anyway, now Ray's head being in the fridge. I mean, I guess that's a reference to Friday the 13th Part 2, but honestly, you could say that about literally any horror movie with a fucking head in the fridge. So it's like, you know, is it really a reference? I don't know. Take that with a grain of salt.
So, couple things here with Chet's death. One, no shot I'd be on a fucking rowboat with her. I don't care if we're going to go see if the people across the lake have cars. Fuck that. She's a terrible person. Two, I know he's weakened. But he went out like a hoe. You're trying to tell me that Margaret, you know, even he had a punji stick through his chest. I don't care. He's an Olympic athlete and she's Margaret. There's no way that she should be able to overpower him like that. And three, Margaret is one sick fuck. Ripping the ear off like that is so much more brutal than cutting it off. I don't know. That made me so queasy, like uneasy, just hearing it ripping. I don't know. I didn't like that. I didn't like it one bit. And then, so I meant to say it in the last set of scenes, but, you know, it was good to see Ray. I like, you know, the confusion that he had. It's very consistent with the hiker. The hiker didn't know what was going on, very discombobulated. But my feelings were quickly changed here. No fucking shot. Ghost Ray deserves to be kissed by Brooke. He was a terrible human. I damn near turned the show off at this point. And then we go to Xavier. Xavier reacted appropriately when fake Rita told her secret, trifling bitch. She deserved to die, to be honest with you. Then we cut back to Brooke, and he took her V-card. I needed a moment. Like, I need some consoling. Like, I didn't handle that well. Sidebar, is this our first time discussing ghost sex since Alex in Scary Movie 2? This is a much different tone in this scene, but... anyway...
Is that Tori Spelling? Was that Alex?
Yeah, Alex. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Tori Spelling. Yeah. The panties that said Tuesday and it was like Friday or some shit. That was so funny. Anyway, I couldn't even fully appreciate the seriousness of Montana knocking Brooke out, to be honest with you, because I was still in shock. So she just let a ghost hit. But I don't know. I don't really know how to feel on this set of scenes because I was so taken aback.
It's crazy.
All right, guys, here's the finale. 20 minutes until sunrise, Brooke wakes up as Montana says she's always playing the victim. She calls her a black hole and asks why she's the bad girl. She kicks her and tells her of the day she saw her at the jazzercise class. Montana confesses to sending the Night Stalker after her. She chokes her and tells her about her brother being her fiancé's best man. She blames her for his death. Brooke stabs her with a sewing needle in the leg, escaping. Jingles grabs Dee Dee and slams her into the wall. She tells him about her father. Was he ever the man I loved or always a killer? Jingle says he wasn't and hobbles away. He tells her Margaret is the one who killed all the counselors. Jingles removes the bullets from his body, saying she convinced him that he did it. He's never killed anyone outside of the war until tonight. Dee Dee asks him to kill her. She can't live with the darkness. He refuses and says there's only one kill left. He walks away saying, you don't get off easy. You live with what you've done. Brooke drops some pans and Montana hears and tackles her and the two squabble. Jingles throws keys at Margaret's feet saying she's Jingles. He grabs her by the throat, almost killing her until Xavier shoots him with two arrows. He shoots him again two more times after revealing he played Robin Hood in 79. Jingles dies and Xavier celebrates. He checks on Margaret, who awakes. She pounces him, stabs him in the chest, and then cuts his ear off. Jingles awakes to a laughing Richard Ramirez, who asks if he accepts Satan as his master. Morning time now, and the bus of kids arrive. Montana mounts Brooke, stabbing her until Brooke snaps and mounts her, stabbing her to death as the bus parks. The kids look on in fear and scream. Police are on scene, arresting Brooke, and Margaret stabs herself in the leg, playing the victim. Margaret accuses Brooke of going crazy and attacking everyone. Ray is asked if he needs help from an EMT who checks his vitals. He wants to get out of here as he begins to lose it. EMT yells, get him to the hospital, and they load him on a gurney with oxygen. Ambulance drives away as Ray appears at the entrance and Jonas appears telling him this is home. The cop's car speed away and the cop asks Montana Spirit if she's okay. She snatches his gun and kills him. She says her name is Zool, joking they're doing this purgatory thing all wrong. She, Ray, and Jonas head back to the camp. Ramirez is driving the cop car Jingles, telling him to put a seatbelt on, and they share laughs as they head towards Los Angeles. Brian, what'd you think about the ending?
My name is Zool? Another Ghostbuster reference? Like, are you kidding me? Dude, like, and no wonder I love Montana so much. God damn, I love it. And look, admittedly, the first time I saw 20 Minutes Till Sunrise, I thought, what the fuck are we going to do? Stretch this 20 minutes over the next four episodes? That's crazy. Obviously not what happened, but I just thought I'd share that. And also, come on. Little nitpick. Spell out the fucking word until. What is this? Communist Russia? Goddamn crazy. But like I said, Montana shit the bed here. You had her on the ground. You could have easily killed her, but had to give your villain dialogue. Very well done by Billy Lord, but still unreal. You blew it. And dude, Jingles is a boss. Took how many bullets from Margaret? Like six at least, right? Because he's got a revolver. Stabbed in the stomach, which he's cleaning up here. And then Xavier fucking Robin Hood's in with four arrows. Like, how is this motherfucker still alive? I mean, I know Nightcrawler, Night Watcher, Night Stalker guy has him, you know, accept Satan and all. But, I mean, he woke up to even see him in the first place. How? How, Sway? Did I use that correctly, fellow kids? And one last question. Ray, for instance, like, when he's in the back of the ambulance but can't leave the confines of the camp, did he just disappear out of the back of the ambulance once they crossed the threshold? Like,
I think so.
So the ambulance was just like, kept on cruising because that chick was sitting right next to him.
Yep.
That's okay. All right.
That's how I took it.
Okay.
How did Brooke get that Montana sent the Night Stalker? All Montana said was... Right? That an AK-47 fell into her lap. Like, talk about jumping to conclusions. What the
she
fuck?
She wasn't watching the flashback, too. So, yeah, I agree. I completely agree.
And I don't know if it was supposed to be funny or not, but when Brooke hurled the boombox at Montana and nailed her in the face, I laughed so motherfucking hard. Like, that was so funny to me because the way she threw it was cute as hell. And then it nails her in the face. And then the way she runs off was even, I don't know. It was just so funny to me. It was so unserious. Fake Rita pissed me off. How are you going to run from Xavier because you want to live and then tell Jingles to kill you? She caved that fast? Soft. She got soft hands, brother. And then talk about horrible timing by Xavier. You couldn't Robin Hood Jingles 2 minutes later? Margaret would be dead and he'd still be alive. That's unfortunate. These dumbass kids on the bus, they don't know basic subtraction. George Bush will pay for his crimes. They said 98 bottles of beer on the wall, took one down, passed it around, and then another, and the number stayed at 98. Those are children that should have been left behind. Tough scene for Brooke to be carving up Montana as the bus pulls up. It's hard to convince anyone that that was self-defense because you're mounted her. You're on top of her and just stabbing the hell out of her. And then, so Buddy has Ray's head in a bag and then doesn't recognize Ray as he walks by. Like, that head that's in the bag is attached to the guy that just walks right past you. How? The fuck? And then it's a great touch, though, to have Ghost Ray have no blood pressure or no pulse. I really like that. But, you know, I don't think getting him to the hospital is going to help. And then, like, you know, another thing. It's a good touch to have him appear at the road after the ambulance drives off, like, showing that he can't leave. This is his purgatory. But, again, like you said, Brian, so the ambulance is like, oh, fuck it. We lost one. He's gone. Well, let's just keep going. I don't know. And then I'm a little confused why Ramirez and Jingles can leave the camp, but no one else can. They just respawn at the entrance every time. I get it. Ramirez, it's not the same situation. He was raised back by Satan or whatever, but I don't know. That's a little weird to me as well. But overall, I guess it was a solid enough episode. I guess I enjoyed it enough, despite all my criticisms.
All right, that was episode 5. Y'all got any fun facts you want to share?
Not really fun facts. I'll just, you know, I've been rating them as we go, so I'll do that. This episode definitely took a step back, but it had enough redeeming qualities. I gave it a 7.25. These two episodes have the same rating on IMDb, a 7.6. And let me tell you, this next episode was not a 7.6 to me. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree.
Ready to pop the question and take advantage of 30% off? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com to get 30% off select lab-grown diamonds. That's BlueNile.com for 30% off lab-grown diamonds. BlueNile.com.
Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Or your grandma here with us, making carne asada.
She does love a cold Corona.
Throw in some dancing.
Oh, we can watch the game.
I'll drink to that.
So a backyard concert with football, food, dancing, and Corona?
And your grandma.
Or we could keep it simple.
Simple is good. Want a Corona?
Thanks. Salud to the perfect day.
Corona. La vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, episode 6. Episode 100 is the title for some reason. I guess this is episode 100 of AHS. All right, 1985. A lady knocks on Richie Ramirez's hotel door asking him to turn the music down. He invites her into the room. She denies, but he snatches her. Jingle says no, he needs to sleep. Jingle says he hates living like an animal. He's tired of this. He tells Jingles, Satan gave you life. You serve at his pleasure. He turns Black Sabbath on as we see montage kill scenes from Ramirez. The car stops and he goes into a store while Jingles waits outside in the car. He puts some REO Speedwagon on and sees Richard's face on the newspaper. He buys one and hands it to some ladies waiting outside the store. They recognize him and a whole crowd of people chase after him. He's hit by a car but keeps on running. He jumps fences and attempts to carjack a woman until he's attacked by the mob. Jingles drives by, swinging his tab, mocks Ramirez, and drives away. Dustin the Birdwatcher snaps photos of the camp and nature until he sees Brooke wants her blood spray painted on a cabin. 1989, Dustin keeps snapping photos until he sees Montana on the dock tanning. He says he's not a true crime person. He's a waterfowl photographer. She says there's no ducks, but you can take her picture. She asks, topless or not, and reaches into his fanny pack. You want to stick that in me? And she stabs him repeatedly. Xavier and Montana make out. He calls dibs on the next kill. The Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous intro plays. and we meet Margaret Booth, who is a wealthy real estate tycoon. Margaret bought up old properties with dark histories. We see that Trevor is her new man. He's snorting coke watching the show as Margaret is snapping on someone about the grand opening of her John Wayne Gacy location. She threatens to take away everything from Trevor, but he says the material stuff can't fill the void where God was. 1985, Margaret is bedside with Trevor, who's surprised he's still alive. Trevor is convinced Brooke was the evil one from camp. He reveals that he knows it was Margaret who stabbed him, and Brooke took the fall for her. He blackmails her, and she tells him he must marry her. The two say they hate each other until they start to have hot, steamy sexual intercourse. All right, Brian, that's the opening set of scenes. What'd you think?
Hot, steamy sexual intercourse. Holy shit. Okay, yeah, so we get a little time jump here. Okay. Like, listen, I don't know what's going on with the show, but for the love of fucking God, can someone tell me what's happening with Mr. Jingle's goatee? Like, that's not even a goatee. What the fuck is happening with this? Like, I've never seen anything like that before. It's fucking ridiculous. Now, what's not ridiculous is Black Sabbath playing over the murder montage. Let's fucking go. That's awesome. But listen, I've seen enough shows to know that Montana and Night Stalker are the bad guys, and they aren't going to win. But a guy can dream, can he? This show would immediately go to one of my favorites if Montana and Night Stalker walked away victorious with everyone else dead. But anyway, weird open, to be honest. Seeing the two of them, like Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau and Grumpy Old Man. Yeah, I don't know. That was weird. The Lifestyles of Rich and Famous opening, that brought me back. Like, I admit, there's lots of nostalgia buttons there that one hit. And I don't know, a fine group of scenes. It's almost like I said during my cold open that we talked about. Like, it feels like I'm watching another show now. You know, kind of trying to piece together what people are doing now, what we are, where we are with everything. Margaret and Trevor went immediately to marriage in 1984. I mean, just jumped right there. I mean, what kept her from killing him all these years to shut him up? You know, how long was he in a fucking coma? Because she tells him that a jury already convicted Brooke. Timeline didn't match up for me, really, because that was, I mean, it felt like it was maybe days, weeks, but yet suddenly, I mean, Brooke didn't get convicted that quickly. I don't know. Anyway, go ahead.
So we hear Ramirez and Jingles have been partners in crime for a year. The hell? That's a crazy time jump without even telling us what happened to Brooke. Like, I don't know. This is my issue with this episode, is we jump ahead and we just put off explaining to us what happened with Brooke for so long. It's like, that's a very vital piece of the story that I want to know as soon as possible. Jingles has a hell of a sense of humor, though. I love the way he bought a newspaper and just handed it to the old woman. And then he casually drove past Ramirez as he got his shit kicked in. That was funny. And now we jump ahead again to 1989. I don't know. Like, I just really don't like that we jumped ahead again, even further, without addressing Brooke. Buddy with the camera, he sure, I guess his name was Dustin. It's a great name. Actually, I hate my name, but he switched up his stance so fucking fast. He went from, I'm here with my girlfriend, to, oh God, yes, when Montana asked if he wanted to stick it in her. Man folded like origami. Have some fucking pride. I'm glad Trevor's alive, but I don't like that we just hear what happened to Brooke. Jury put her away. Like, I would rather see more about it. Like, show us more of what she's been going through during this time. I don't know. I think this is the first episode that I don't really love the open or the outlook for it.
All right, that sexual intercourse I was talking about, that's interrupted as the assistant Courtney interrupts telling her some news. Brooke Thompson lost her last appeal and will be executed. The warden welcomes her and is happy she's quiet. The men in solitary are hooting and hollering after her until she sees Richard Ramirez. Brooke says she gutted that bitch Montana and she's licking Satan's balls. Ray tells Xavier and Montana they can't kill everyone that wanders through here. Xavier says being good got him nowhere. Being bad feels good. Montana shows in the newspaper article about Brooke being executed, and then Dustin's girlfriend appears. Xavier appears behind the girlfriend and slits her throat. Ray is furious, saying he won't clean up for them anymore. We're in Brooke's cell when she hears Ramirez saying he wants to die from the electric chair like a rock star. He says injection will hurt and burn until it snakes to your heart. He appears in her cell saying he can protect her from death. All she has to do is say yes. Fuck off, she tells him. Margaret and Courtney look over the financial reports and she's not thrilled with the earnings. Those were the expectations. She asks about the Ed Gein farm, but the deal fell through. Courtney tells her they should consider selling the business. We're at peak value. She snaps, saying murder always sells good, as Trevor brings in a newspaper about more deaths at Camp Redwood. It's the best news they could have gotten, she tells Courtney. Jingles is a father in Alaska now, as his wife tells him he is her Superman. He tells her he's up for a promotion but doesn't want to jinx it. He says goodbye to his family and leaves for work. He's at the video store and his coworker tells him they're opening another store in Juneau. There's a lot of future in VHS. Margaret is announcing a big camp and music fest at Camp Redwood. She tells the reporter, "Don't you want to be scared?" Chet is furious seeing her, asking Montana if she knows what it's like when all your cells are begging for oxygen. Jingles and his wife see the news about Camp Redwood. He says he feels nothing about Camp Redwood anymore. He's over it. He's free. All right, Bryce, next set of scenes, what do you think?
This is probably where my confusion starts up the most of any part of these episodes. I mean, I've got so many fucking questions I'm waiting on answers for, so hopefully they come in the next few episodes. But so why are just the counselors in limbo here at the camp? Like, Montana specifically said that they've killed tons of people that have come there. Where are all their ghosts? Like, yeah. if literally everyone can interact with the living like they're living too, you should have like woods full of people trying to warn people. Or, I mean, why has nobody tried to tell anyone that Margaret was the one who did all this shit all of these years with all these people who came to the camp? Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm super confused with that. Hopefully I get the answer. Anyway, I don't know. Leslie Jordan is Margaret's assistant, though. I can't remember the last time that I've seen that dude in something. Honestly, I think it's Jason Goes to Hell, and I love him in that movie, which makes two Friday the 13th Part 9 alum in this series so far. Rest in peace to Leslie, though. He passed away in 2022. But the rest of the stuff at Video Shack, I don't know. It's fine, I guess. There's a little fun little fact, though. Like, Benjamin gave the Video Shack customer Mystic Pizza, which features Julia Roberts, who's Emma's aunt, obviously, and Tootsie, which features Jessica Lange, who obviously was in AHS Murder House, which I haven't seen. But that's a little fun little Easter egg there. Last thing, though, this press conference literally at the camp, like, it kind of goes back to what I was just complaining about. Like, what is stopping any of these ghosts from just walking up, trying to sink Margaret or just kill her? You know, it's not like they can kill these ghosts again, right? So I don't know. I don't understand it. Hopefully we get answers to that.
Okay, Courtney being played by Leslie Jordan is hilarious. Rest in peace, like you said. He was a funny-ass little old man. But Brooke's going to be executed? It just feels like such a miss to me that they're just talking about her when she was the main character. We should be seeing this happen. We should be seeing what she's going through. I don't know. We finally do see her right after this. But again, I don't know. Maybe we didn't need to see what she'd been going through, but we're like halfway through the episode and we're just now seeing our main character from the season. It's weird seeing Ramirez in prison. Like, we didn't see his head get spiked on a tree. The justice system couldn't realize that he's already dead. Like, that's another thing I was talking about. So Satan raised him back up. So he's legit alive again. Beats me. They don't really explain that. He did have some funny interactions with Brooke though, in the prison. That was kind of funny. Every time she'd walk by. Speaking of dead, the ghost of dead ass Jingles gets an attractive wife while looking like that and given his history, and I'm single. Life just makes no sense. It's kind of weird seeing or how Montana was all for killing everyone, literally everyone that came to camp she wanted to kill, but suddenly she wants Chet to refrain from killing Margaret.
Yeah.
Like you said, Brian, what's stopping these ghosts? Because even if they do, they're ghosts. They can't be apprehended. They can't be taken to prison. They can't do shit. They're murderous ghosts. So what's the thought process in waiting to kill Margaret? Killing her while the news cameras rolling would make a hell of a statement. Like, I don't know. I'm just ready to see how this one finishes, to be honest with you.
Yeah. All right, guys, here's the ending of this episode. Ramirez gets a visit from Red in prison. She tells him of the concert at Camp Redwood. Billy Idol is the headliner, and she's going to record him a bootleg tape. He's furious at the opening bands, thinking he's going to be just like them, fading into memories as time goes on. I want to be immortal. Brooke's cell door is open and she's told it's time. The priest offers her last rites. Fuck that guy, she says, as Ramirez offers her one more chance, but she shoots him the bird. He has the flyer in the pentagram and prays to Satan for a shot at immortality. The flyer begins to smoke, and Brooke is asked if she has any last words. She says she knows Margaret is out there, saying she's innocent and she'll suffer for it. She spits on the glass and they strap her to the table. Clock strikes midnight and the lethal injection is administered. The smoke from Ramirez's cell fills the stall with the prison guard whose eyes turn black. He lets Richard free and Brooke's death has been announced at 12:02. Trevor says it was anticlimactic and Margaret wishes they still use the guillotine. Back at the video store, a customer complains of not getting the movie she wanted. She wanted horror movies, But Jingle says she shouldn't watch those. The world has too much violence. He gets back home calling out for Lorraine. He goes into the bedroom and finds her dead in the bed, blood all over the walls. He finds his baby with a note on the Camp Redwood flyer that says Satan will have his vengeance. Jingles drops the baby off at Lizzie's house. He tells her Lorraine is dead. I thought I could have a life. I thought I could be free. Darkness will always follow me and tell Bobby when he's older I love him. I'm leaving to protect him. Goodbye, son. Jingles walks away as Brooke's corpse is taken to the morgue. She's given a shot and suddenly springs up alive. Dee Dee reveals herself, welcoming her to the land of the living. All right, Brian, what do you think about the ending?
You know, Dustin, you were talking about Mr. Jingles, like, being raised from the dead. So, okay, so Satan raised him from the dead, too, I guess. You know, so he's just a regular dude walking around. Well, what doesn't he have to be doing, like, evil shit? Or is Satan just like, you can go around and live your life and be happy? Satan just don't do that, does he? Like, are they going to explain that later on? I don't know. We'll see.
I'm not the expert in, you know, relationships with Satan. But, yeah, I would think that you're right.
I just know he went to Georgia. Anyone else notice how ridiculous it is that Brooke is wearing full makeup like all the time in prison? It doesn't look at all like she's been in prison for like any of this time. I mean, come on with that. And the rest of this, I mean, we're, like I said, we're going kind of going back into sci-fi territory. I mean, even more than we have been. The black mist cloud that attacks the dude on the toilet. By the way, if I'm sitting on the toilet and a black mist cloud comes creeping up underneath, I mean, more than usual. I mean, you know, look, I'm not just going to sit there and watch it. Like, I'm just going to say that. But all that just reminded me of how terrible it is to poop without a cell phone. Like, it's just, those were the dark ages, weren't they? I'll tell you what.
You ever forget your cell phone in the other room and you have to, like, reach in the shower and read the shampoo bottle or something just to be in there? Like, what the fuck?
Nightmare. Absolute nightmare.
Red. Yowza. Hell yeah, Ricky. She's fine as hell. I didn't like Brooke saying fuck God. Don't condone that. Like, we're gonna have to have some marriage counseling after that line. Don't like it. I love her talking that shit to Margaret though. That was good shit when she's like, I know you're out there. That was good. She spit on the glass. But they killed her. I don't know how the final three episodes were even worth watching as I'm watching this in real time. It's like, oh no, I'm out. I'm checked out. The whole stuff with Jingles. Ramirez killing his wife makes sense and is a great setup, but everything after that, so him leaving the baby on the doorstep only to stand 30 feet away from the door and give his speech to his sister-in-law, like, why even leave a card with the baby then? Why not just knock on the door and have the conversation face-to-face with her close up? And then, to me, it was kind of because, like, the whole point of leaving a card is usually because you're, you know, I'm going to be gone by the time she sees the card. That made no fucking sense. And then, good point. It was so corny to me having him put the raincoat on and carry and, like, focus on the keys like that. You're not Batman, bro. You don't have to put your uniform on. The fuck? I hated that. But, you know, when fake-ass Rita revived Brooke, the episode is kind of salvaged and Rita kind of redeemed her, or fake Rita. What's her real name? Dima or something like that?
Dee Dee
Gregorius, former shortstop for the Yankees. She kind of redeemed herself, so I don't hate her anymore. She brought my girl back to life. This episode was all over the place, man.
Yeah, that's nuts. I don't even know what the hell the next three episodes are going to be about. So any of my questions get answered?
I've seen this, but I don't remember. You're just going to have to watch the next three episodes. I told you, but it's like a lot of the fans commented, you know, they say, most of them said, like, the first, five, six episodes are really good. Then, like, too much starts going on, and I don't disagree with that. I mean, I still enjoy it, but a lot does, too much goes on.
So, to me, it's just we've strayed so far away from what I thought we'd get in the season. This, with the set, I'm thinking this is going to be, you know, taking place at a summer camp. It's going to be very Friday the 13th-esque or Sleepaway Camp-esque with some comedy mixed in, with some new twist. I was all in, but I don't love it anymore. This was my least favorite episode. I mean, it still had some good qualities, and I'm invested in the characters. The acting's really good. It's got the production that we've come to expect from the series, but it was definitely a huge step back. I gave it a 6. I just didn't love it. It was okay, but yeah.
So 6 is still pretty good for your rating scale.
It is, but I'm thinking I'm heavily biased because of Emma Roberts.
That's fair. Hey, and I was going to say, man, my go-to is always the Hawaiian Breeze air freshener to read in the shitter.
Oh, okay. I got you.
You know, you always got to read the air freshener.
That's funny. I got a can of that under my bathroom sink right now. That can has been in there since I bought this house in 2015. I don't like the smell of that at all.
But don't throw it away. Just
I'm more. No, I don't throw it away. Just in case I run out of the cinnamon apple that I like.
Y'all got any fun facts that you want to share before we wrap this episode up?
No.
I was just getting, the only fun fact I had was the one that you were unsure of, but you got right. The title of the episode is literally because it's the 100th episode of American Horror Story.
Yep, that's cool. Yeah, there's a lot of all the seasons I've seen, they're all good. Like, I've enjoyed all of them. But they all have the issue of a lot of characters and a lot of stories to keep up with. Like, I just watched Asylum this past weekend. There were so many time jumps, character jumps, but it was good. I mean, I still liked it, but a lot to keep up with. Shout out to all of our blood donors. Really appreciate y'all. It means a lot to us that you help us pay for this program, as we call it. We appreciate y'all listening. We hope y'all have been enjoying this. I'm excited to, we're going to conclude this season next week. We're going to have 3 episodes, so it's going to be a little bit longer of an episode. But yeah, I'm excited to conclude the season just because I can't remember what the fuck happened either, to be honest with you. y'all have a good one. Just want to remind everybody.
With the $5 meal deal at McDonald's, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a 4-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Price and participation may vary for a limited time only.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.